Good morning. It's another beautiful, serene morning here at the Old Broadway Synagogue at 15 Old Broadway, right here after the 8 o'clock minyan. As per Seth's suggestion, we'll be adding that to the beginning of this year. We're gonna take a quick look at the sources that we mentioned last week. We were discussing the topic of Egla Rufa, and in the sugya of Egla Rufa, we saw that there were three main approaches. There was the approach of the Rambam, as recorded in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam, who said that this whole fancy ceremony, and it is quite an intricate and involved ceremony involving specific kind of cows and specific kind of places with measurements by specific kinds of people, everything very particular, that this was all one big design to catch the mystery murderer. And of course, the Ramban, the Nachmanides, raised a number of questions with it. He said, well, then really it's not so intrinsically significant. It's just, you know, one big wanted sign, you know, and then it doesn't really have any intrinsic significance. And he thinks that there is some kind of intrinsic significance to the process. The Ibn Ezra had some kind of, you know, even though we think of Ibn Ezra, we tend to think of him as more of a Pashtun, a literalist. He had a quasi-mystical suggestion, which was that there was something cosmically that the people in that city did wrong. Otherwise, nothing would have ever happened there. And so this process was a kapara, was an atonement for something that they did wrong. Now, he's not accusing them of murdering this person. He's saying something else. Okay, so what we were trying to go more or less in the direction of the Ramban, which was to argue that there's some intrinsic significance to this, but we were honest that there are like many details which need to be explained. And so what we're going to do today is going to take a look at many of the halachos of Egla Rufa. We just noted last week, you know, how striking it was, how, you know, the entire leadership of the society has to get involved. You know, whether it's from the Kohanim to the Zakenim of that city to people who are going to see it as the leaders of the entire Jewish people. I mean, a massive, massive, national event. And then we spoke about last week how it's like very particular, the place that you have to go, a Nachal Eitan. And we saw, you know, a disagreement there between the Rambam and Rabbeinu Bechaya. How do you define a Nachal Eitan? So Rabbeinu Bechaya thought it was a very fertile place, and the Rambam thought it was Dafka, a place that wasn't fertile. So why does it have to be specifically at that place? So what we're going to try to do is take a look at some of the details and then bring everything back today to try and explain what the super theory of Egla Rufa is. We're always looking for one unifying theory in different areas of halacha to explain various various strange data points. And then our secondary project was to figure out how does this relate to the question of where did we start? I mean, how did we get into Egla Rufa to begin with? How did we get into this mess? Always important to stop and ask ourselves in life, how did we get into this mess? Right? So it was the story of outstanding. Avi may be wounded, but he thinks clearly. Very well. So, right. Exactly. So we had this very, you know, puzzling Mamar Chazal that somehow, you know, Egla Rufa was the last sugya that Yaakov and Yosef happened to be learning together, mind you, before Matan Torah. And seeing the wagons made Yaakov think about the Egla Rufa, and he said, I must really be alive. So clearly Chazal are up to something here. Chazal are twisting their proverbial mustaches at us and saying, we know something about Egla Rufa that you don't. And thus we understand the Yaakov and Yosef story in a way that sheds light on Egla Rufa and vice versa. So the first thing that we quoted for the Medrash Chazal is the most obvious parallel is that there was mysterious circumstances surrounding both of them. Egla Rufa only takes place when there's a murder, and it's Lo Noda Mihikahu is what the Pasuk said. Igor translating to, what's Lo Noda Mihikahu mean?
No, there's no witness to see who killed him.
Exactly, and how does that connect to Yosef? Because
only the call that received, nobody knows.
Tarov Tarav Yosef, but it was really a mystery. And Yaakov wasn't entirely convinced.
So he thought it was wild animal. That's what
exactly.
The number of the trefer.
And it's clear to everybody that this is some kind of a set. Up, we don't really know what happened to Yosef. Yosef is missing, and Yaakov maybe concludes that it was okay. All these parallels, and then of course we spoke about how another idea is that, you know, the Egla Rufa is when the guest wasn't properly taken from one place to the next, and of course Yosef wasn't given proper escort, he was sent to Shechem all by himself, and we quoted from the Rambam the incredible importance of escorting our guests and how this is something that Beis Din themselves would take care of, and that's why even when we do this symbolic levaya of Dalet Amos, the Rambam says that's one of the most important mitzvos. Hachnasas Orchim, we know, is greater than Hakpalas Pnei Ashchina, because Avram interrupted his divine rendezvous to greet his guests, and the Rambam says that even greater than Hachnasas Orchim is Levayas Orchim, you know, making sure that they get to their place. Okay, all these things are true, but not enough. So we're going to proceed today with the sugya. So, do you mind if I just use this sheet? Okay, so we had, that's basically a summary of everything we had seen up until source 9. Okay. And here you have quite an anomalous halacha. The Rambam says, An she'ir krova shenis achru. They were derelict. The closest city we know is responsible for bringing this cow, but they were derelict, they were negligent, and they didn't do it. They were on strike. They were on Egla Rufa strike. Velo heviu Egla Rufa. So the Rambam comes up with the halacha. Kofin Osan, Beis Din has the right to compel them using whatever sanctions are necessary. Umivian, v'afil lachar kama shanim. So the Minchas Chinuch, a very famous and classical achron on the Rambam, so he simply throws up his hands. He says, I don't understand how this could possibly be true. What's the Rambam's makor? What's the Rambam's source for this? Generally speaking, when it comes to chataos and ashamos, korbanos which come for kapara, and we know this is at least in that realm, even if it's not a standard korban which is brought in the Beis HaMikdash, nonetheless, it's sort of in that realm. Kaper li'amcha Yisrael asher padisa la'ashem, v'ni kaper lahem adam. It's a korban which comes on kapara, so the Minchas Chinuch says it's, you know, analogous in that way, conceptually speaking, to chatas and asham. And you can't use kfiya, you can't use force for chatas and asham. Mm-hmm. So why do you have the right to use force here? Nowhere in the Gemara does it say that you can use force. So the Rambam comes up with this halacha. That's, you know, anomaly number one for the day. Igor Kimovich
Gans. Maybe it's because of this, usually Kohen Gadol mechaper during Yom Kippur for Tzibur.
Correct, no? Correct,
and,
correct.
Usually Chatot Nasham, it's private, it's not Tzibur, only king maybe, usually.
Okay, so Igor is making a good suggestion. Igor is at least pointing out a distinction. So let's just take a look at Igor. What Igor is saying is, look, this isn't the classic chatas and asham. Chatas and asham would relate to an individual sin. But what you're dealing with here is something of a public institution. Yeah. So maybe that makes a difference. I think it's a valuable suggestion. And I think, let's just take a step back from the particulars, is that what Igor is doing is always good Talmudic methodology. Is trying to, and it's good scientific methodology, pointing out differences and saying, okay, well, maybe that will, you know, cause the halacha to be different. But the second step of that process in general, and in particular here, is you'd have to substantiate that. You'd have to show at least other parallels of korbanos tzibur where you say you don't use coercion, even if you are otherwise would have. So it's at least the beginning of an approach. I think it's a very valuable and fertile approach. Maybe it's a PhD in waiting.
So I think, you know, we know what PhD means.
very good, Igor. Go ahead. Oh, nobody said anything? Okay. So it's at least the beginning of an approach. We're going to try to develop a broader perspective. But I do very much appreciate Igor raising that. And I think it's a good thing to generally to learn from is that, you know, sometimes you can find these differences. You can start putting them together and making a story out of it. That's what research is all about in Talmud and in other fields. So take a look here at source 11. This is the Rambam. The Rambam's psak of Egla Ruf. It all comes from the Gemaras in Sota, but the Rambam puts it together in a very interesting way. So the Rambam says as follows, Harug shenimtza nofel ba'aretz v'lo no dami hikahu. You have a corpse and it's a murder and you don't know. Manichin oso bimkomo. You leave the corpse there. What should we already be thinking?
Why don't they bury him?
Yeah.
This violates one of the most basic principles of Judaism.
Before the sunset.
The mitzvah made.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, mitzvah.
So this is a tremendous... So this is rule breaker number two for the day. You know, first we had this halacha of kfiya, and now we have this halacha of manichin oso bimkomo. What? I mean, Judaism believes that no matter how a person lived their life, they're entitled to dignified burial. That's why the halachos of burial in the Torah come up in which context? A person who was... Igor always points this out.
Who was executed.
Yes. Excellent. So the Torah is making a point here, which is that the Torah, if it wanted to, could have spoken about burial from a general perspective, but it didn't. It spoke about burial from the perspective of somebody who, you know, in some sense was, you know, the greatest of criminals. He, it's a very specific kind of death that he's given, etc., etc. But the Torahs point out that you don't understand simply by virtue of the person's human dignity, so they deserve a burial. So what is happening here? I mean, poor guy was murdered, and not only that, we're leaving his body out there. I mean, in general, we should be sensitive to this, but certainly in 2012, after if what you saw, everybody, you know, the whole world saw the way that the Libyans handled the Gaddafi thing. I mean, you don't need more than that to see, you know, bodies rotting. I mean, it's disgusting. So Manichin oso bimkomo, and not only that, but v'yotzin chamisha zakein mibezdin hagadol shebirushalayim. Who has to get involved? The Supreme Court, the gedolei hador, shenemar v'yatzu zakeinecha v'shovtecha v'modedim imenu el ha'arim shesvivo sechalal, and they measure. So let me ask you a question. Let me just 1 second. What are the bezdin hagadol? I mean, these are the Supreme Court. What do we want them from a social utility standpoint spending their time on? Like really complex legal cases that other people can't handle. And what are they being brought in here to do?
Measure.
Now, with all due respect to the Beis Din HaGadol, they don't appear to be the only people in society who can do arithmetic or use a ruler. This is not a particularly complex task. And so the idea that we're getting the Beis Din HaGadol involved is shocking. And certainly for what appears to be so perfunctory a task. Afilu nimtza bitzad irzo. Even if you know which city is the closest, you know, you can just look. Right, the next city is 3 miles away, and this city
don't
is...
Don't they have stones, milestones in the roads, you know?
100 feet away, so you know. Shadavar yadua bevadai shiha krova mitzvah limdod. You still have to drag the Supreme Court down and interrupt whatever legal proceedings they're involved in. For this, why? I mean, just look. Skip the step. Achar shemodedin, and then after you measure, v'nodai here yira krova, kovrim es hanerag bimkomo. Only then do you bury the corpse. V'chozrin ziknei Yerushalayim bimkomo, and then you send the zakenim back. So you got them involved deliberately for a task that almost anybody could do. You know, get a bunch of 7th graders, let them measure. What is going on here? And only then you can bury the body. Ubezdin, and then the Bezdin of that city takes over. Ubezdin shall osahir mevi an eglas bakar mishal anshe osahir. Then they bring the eglas. So we have so many questions. Rambam goes on to say, the orphan osasham, and then this is a number of halachos later. Then you decapitate the egla, the kofitz meachareha, right from the behind. We spoke about that list through the Rabbeinu or the Sforno. This foreigner who said this was symbolic of the fact that the person who was killed didn't know who his killer was. Ubezdin shall osa irim kol zikne ayir afiluhim mea kol rochzin esidayim sham b'makom arifasa shall ego. Then everybody washes their hands, the ceremonial hand washing ceremony and the declaration of innocence. The omrim sham b'soch hanachal, and they say there, belashon hakodesh, yadenu lo shafchu es hadam hazeh, veinenu lo ra'u, our eyes have not seen, our hands have not spilled the blood. Kilomar shlo bali adenu hanerag hazeh. He didn't come into our city. Upatrenuhu below mizonos, and we didn't send him out without food. Velo reinuhu, and we didn't see him. Vinichu below levia. That's what I was talking about before. We didn't fail to escort him. Veakonim omrim balashon hakodesh, and then the kohanim come in. Right. So this is the third class of national leadership. You had the bezdin hagadol, then you had the local bezdin, then you had the kohanim, and they say kapir lamcha Yisrael, etc., etc. V'holchin lahen, and then they go home. V'akadosh Baruch Hu mechaper l'adam sheneemar v'nikaper lahem hadam. So what I'm intrigued by here is this insistence on lashon hakodesh. Why don't they just say it in the vernacular? Let's say everybody spoke French, or Russian. So why does it, I mean, again, if the Rambam is correct, it's all pragmatic, shouldn't they be declaring these things in whatever the local vernacular is? I mean, why is there an insistence, an absolute halachic requirement that it must be in Hebrew? Yeah.
Well, there's an analog to the fact that you have to bring the Beit Din HaGadol down.
Good.
It's just like you have to go to the most exalted Beit Din, you have to go to the most exalted Lashon.
Outstanding. So what Seth is pointing us towards is that there's something formal about this. Something inherently formal, not pragmatic. There's something There's some message here, and we're going to have to put all these pieces together, but I absolutely think that those halachos go together, which is why I presented that way. Okay. The next anomaly. Egla Arufa Asura Behana V'Nikberes B'Makom Arefasa. The Egla Arufa is forbidden in Hana forever. Now there's a general Talmudic principle which is called Ein Lecha Davar Shenaseis Mitzvasa Umo Olenbo, which means once something has been used for its function, its primary function, an object that has certain telos, it was meant to be used for something, so after it's used for something, you can get hana from it, there's no prohibition. Because up until the point where, you know, let's say it was involved in korbanos. So up until that point, you can't use it for anything else. But after that point, generally speaking, there's no issue whatsoever. But the Egla Rufa is going to break that rule, and that even after you do the process, it's asr behana, it's forbidden forever. Why? Hanachal, not only that, but not only the Egla Rufa itself, meaning the carcass, this is a valuable carcass. You know, maybe we don't think about it that way, but you know, you could use the skins, make purses, and shoes, and wristlets.
Why can't use for the bakosh, like tefillin or toys for Torah?
Exactly.
You can do the kapero, the name. You can use this.
Anything really.
No, but for the mat, you know, you can say, you know, you commemorate his memory, you know.
Right, right. So, you know, why is it all this, you know, going to waste? Hanachal shenefer boha egla. And not only that, but that whole area, aser bizria ve'avod la'olam, permanently. Now, if the Rambam is correct that this whole thing was done simply to find the, you know, in the Rambam, the Mor Nevuchim, that is, you know, simply to find the murderer. So why should it be usher forever, even after they find the murderer? Third, kol ha'avodos poslos es ha'egla, kemosha poslin v'par aduma. Any work, if you had done any work whatsoever with the Egla Rufa, it can't be used. I mean, why? All you're going to do with this is decapitate it, and then it's going to be usher forever. So who cares if last week Jebediah used it to plow his field, or Ezekiel used it to. What else? What would Ezekiel use it for?
His chariot.
Exactly. Exactly. So who cares? I mean, what's the difference?
But that's explicit in the psukim.
No, I understand. But why would the Torah mandate that?
What the reason? No, maybe.
It's a fair question.
I mean, you know, there's. And then the Rambam is saying here, that's kind of like Para Aduma. We know the Para Aduma, same halacha, but
yes.
You know, why? What's so important about this cow not having... I mean, there's like literally dozens of questions here. Yeah, Avi, go ahead.
I just think that the whole thing of Shkuk Dami, for one, that, you know, that there's blood spilled, that's a murder on the land, and it's Kedusha of the land, actually, has a lot to do with these halachas. The Kedusha of the land, that you have to, he has special things. It's not a normal murder where you don't know who did it.
100%.
Who's responsible?
Yeah. I think Avi is 100% correct. We'll just go two halachos further, but I'm going to put together what Avi said and what Seth said, and we're going
to
build.
Isn't it the kind of Hevel with Hashem tell to Hevel with blood of your brothers shout from the other earth?
Right, right. There is a focus here on the earth. What Avi is saying, it can be verified by the halacha that this really only applies in Israel and the extension of Israel, which is Eivir HaYarden. Seth, you had a comment. Please.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know if it's relevant at all, but in the ancient Near East, a cow is a noble animal, and that in fact, noble men are referred to as a bull or an ox, and noble women are called a cow, and it's not an insult. Like
you cow.
Right. If you were to call your wife a cow back then, it would not at all be an insult. Like, you know, Gilgamesh's mother is called a wild cow of the fold because it means...
Even the wild part is not an insult.
Not an insult at all.
No, it's quite a compliment.
So you should call Laura a wild cow of the fold and see how well that...
I've been doing it all these years. I've been doing that already.
To have a calf that has not been worked, this could be seen as
beautiful.
Like a gentleman, like a... like a person who is noble and who is not rather a laborer, but who is exalted, actually.
Very good. I like that. I think that is quite relevant. And I'm going to store that away both for Egla Rufa purposes and for pastoral purposes. You know, I can tell all these women. It wasn't an insult. He meant it in the Near Eastern sense of the term. Obviously. Obviously.
Good luck to you, sir.
Well, I have it on good authority. I can just send them to you. Gilgamesh's mother was called...
The wild
cow of the forest.
So next halacha, ve'ein orphin shtei agalos ke'achas. She'enos in mitzvos chavilos chavilos. So the Rambam says here, so another halacha is that, let's say, it's a whole big to-do. So remember, we said you have to get the Bezdin HaGadol involved. So, you know, let's say it's going to take them a week to travel. This happened in the northern part of Israel, so they got to spend 3 days there, 3 days back. And there's really two of these that need to be done. So I have an idea. Why don't we just do the ceremonies together? We'll get everybody together. We'll get the two cows. We'll work it through. And do two together. But the Rambam says no. You can only do one at a time. And again, this is gonna. So what's gonna end up happening to happen? These guys are gonna have to go and come back, and then maybe, you know, start out again for the next one.
What about Kvodah Met?
Yeah.
How many days do the Bezdin have to wait?
Yeah, think about it. So how long is it going to take the Bezdin HaGadol? You just have to figure it out. But exactly. Imagine. So, at what cost? All well and good to say everybody gets their own ceremony, but at what cost? Yeah. And then the final halacha that I want to take a look at is from the Sifrei. The Sifrei says, Ki yimatzei, v'lo b'shash hamatzoi, mikan amru misharabu haratzchanim bat la'egla rufa. When murder became, unfortunately, commonplace, right, when murder rates, you know, went up, which is in the 70s, they stopped doing the egla rufa. Well, why? Isn't the Egla Rufa all the more necessary? Especially if the Rambam is correct, that it's merely pragmatic. You know, you want to catch, so if it's just about catching the guy, so do as many Egla Rufas as you can. So why would it, this is totally counterintuitive, that you would think the more murders that there were, the more of a need for Egla Rufa there would be. But what we're saying is that at a point where Egla Rufa became common, then when murder became common, we stopped doing Egla Rufa.
Maybe because the Kibbutz Rufa is saving the people, because after people don't deserve to saving, you know, maybe it's much.
Yeah, so that's possible. So let's now try to put everything together. We've got all these questions. So I think putting together maybe what Avi and Seth said, I think the essence of Egla Rufa is the following idea. From a Jewish perspective, we do have a bit of a radical, what I call a radical anti-utilitarian perspective on human life. You know, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, "Kol mekayim nefesh achas, kilu mekayim olam mele." There's no way to justify that from a utilitarian standpoint, but we don't have to apologize and we don't have to try. Because there is this idea that one life is really... There's no value associated with it. It crosses over into the threshold of across the threshold into infinite value. So when you have an unsolved murder is a terrible thing, as Avi said, shvichas damim in general, but especially when you have a murder that's unsolved, which you can't come to terms with, there's no process of justice. Not only we don't perceive that, and this is a crucial Jewish perspective, we don't perceive that as an individual tragedy. We really don't. It's certainly tragic for the individual and for the family. We don't deny that. But we really perceive this as undermining the value of the sanctity of life in this country. We really do perceive it as a national issue. And thus, everything stops. And the leaders of that society, starting from the very top, before you start talking about the Bezdin of that city, they come down and they do something which a seventh grader can do. And they start measuring. Not because we need, you know, their arithmetic expertise. We need their stature. And what we're saying is that this goes to the very top. When there is an unsolved murder, when the sanctity of life has been undermined in such a way, because again, when you can bring the perpetrator to justice, so in a way that reaffirms the sanctity of life. Because what you're saying is that this is intolerable and there's a process and a protocol for doing it. But when there is no means, you simply can't walk away. Sometimes you just can't let things go. And so the Beis Din HaGadol, number one, has to get involved, and the Kohanim, and the Beis Din of that city. And it has to be a formal process, B'Lashon HaKodesh. It's not a question of pragmatism. It's a question of making a statement that this cuts to the core of who we are. And so we use our what I would call our ethnic language. This is who we are. This is a statement of, this is a mission statement. This is what we believe in. And thus, all of the anomalous halachos, I think, start to fall into place. So just to give a number of examples, we said that generally speaking, after you've used a ritual object for its purpose, you can use it for whatever you want, but not egla rufa. Because the whole point is that it has to be a testament for all time, an eternal testament about the sanctity of human life. That we're not turning our back on this individual. So that cow can have no other associations with it. If it had been used for somebody else, if it was Jebediah or Ezekiel's cow, we don't want anybody looking at it and saying, oh, that was Jebediah's cow. We want everybody saying, this is the egla rufa. This is the cow that was designated for this purpose. And not only that, but even after the process of Egla Arufa, you can't touch it and use it for anything else. And not just the Egla Arufa itself, but the whole land around it. It gets blocked off. It's just this big, and that's why the Rabbeinu Bechaya said it works a lot nicer if it's in a fertile area, because now everybody sees it, it goes to waste. And we're not saying, oh, we're creating a financial incentive for people, you know, to catch murderers, but it goes much deeper than that. The point is that when the human life has been extinguished, that's the way we treat it. We say that this is something that we can't forget about and can't just walk away from and say, look, these things happen. No! These things can't happen. They shouldn't happen. We don't want them to happen. And so everything stops and everything changes. That land becomes a kind of monument, a monument to that person, a monument to what happened. Moreover, I think this is really why you can't do two at once. The whole point is to reestablish the sanctity of every individual. You start bundling them together, you make it a, you know, kind of efficiency process. Right, you undermine the message. And the whole message is it's one person. One person, one process. And you can't ever start bundling them together. And in light of that, I think the Rambam's halacha of kfiyah, of forcing... Where did the Rambam get this idea from? You can force the people to bring it. If they don't bring it, they don't bring it. It's their fault, it's their sin, but they don't bring it. That's what the Minchas Chinuch said. Where did the Rambam get the idea that in this area alone, you can use force, you can use sanctions to get the city to bring the Egla Ruva? But that's the whole point. Is that Egla Ruva means sometimes you just can't let go. And if they're not doing their responsibility, the elders of that city, to bring the Egla Ruva, you force them. Because in a certain sense, and this is what Igor was pointing out, it relates to all of us. It's not just their issue, it's a national issue. And if they're not willing to live up to their responsibilities, and we remind them, you can't just let it go. You can't just say, okay, well, one person was murdered, we didn't figure it out, we'll get the guy next time. No! That's not good enough when it comes to murder. And so you even force them, you force them to do it. Now, here we come to that final halacha, which is, you know, so then why, when murder becomes more prevalent, do we not do the ceremony of Egla Rufa? So the way that I try to explain this is that Egla Rufa needs, it only makes sense. It's such a complex and intricate ritual process with such a clear message. It only makes sense in a society which is ready to hear it. But in a society in which the value of human life has already been undermined, Misha Rabu Haratzchanim, murder is already accepted. People don't see murder as undermining
society.
The ethos of society, so then it just doesn't make any sense. We're going to get the Beis Din HaGadol to come down to the Kohanim and say, exactly. In other words, it only makes sense if it's a clarion call to, oh my God, it's a wake-up call that everybody's ready to hear about the sanctity of the individual, the sanctity of human life. If it's a society in which people have lost that sensitivity, it's just perceived as this kind of bizarre, strange ritual. It doesn't have that message. It lacks its true purpose, which is to be a clarion call. Now, if all these things are true, now we've gone through all of the many halachos, I think, can't be certain, because Chazal didn't say it themselves, so I you know, freely admit, without embarrassment, that I am speculating about this, but I actually think that's what Chazal had in mind when they said, oh, this is what the Yaakov and Yosef story was. In other words, the comment that Yosef was making to Yaakov with this Egla Rufa, and obviously it's a homily, it's Chazal just pointing this out, is that sometimes, remember, Yaakov had held on for all these years, And then it was just too much. And he couldn't believe that Yosef was still alive. Lo hamin lahem. He couldn't. And Yosef was sending him this message which said, sometimes, Dad, you just can't let go. Sometimes there are, you know, even if it's about just one individual, sometimes we hold on and we don't just say, okay, what happened, happened. And I think that was part of the message that Yosef was sending to Yaakov. He's saying, look. And then when Yaakov saw that, it reminded him and he said, that's true. Okay, Yosef is still around. And I think that's what Chazal are putting their finger on. It's not just lo noda mihi kahu. You know, Yosef was a mystery and Egla Arufa is a mystery. But the real point is that there are certain things in life which are so important that we don't move on. Sometimes we have no choice but to move on. But when you're dealing in the case of Egla Arufa, whatever the case is, but the case of Egla Arufa, the real message is that just like Yaakov wouldn't let go when it came to Yosef, that should sort of be society's mentality about the Egla Arufa. Is that you don't just say, okay, what happened, happened. And it really does become a national event. An event where we say, as tempting as it would be to accept what happened, we can't look at things that way. We have to reaffirm for ourselves, and as a society, the value of each and every individual. And so that if there's an unsolved murder, then there needs to be some kind of process by which society makes a statement that we're not going to tolerate any kind of wanton murder. We're not going to tolerate this kind of violence. Again, if you can bring the perpetrator to justice, that itself serves as a kind of social statement. That process means something. But if in the absence of that, there needs to be something. And that's what Egla Rufa means. It means you can't let go. Yeah, Elliot.
Just say a commentary on American society.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
It's so disturbing to me.